Good morning, and welcome to Family Radio Forum here on WERU. We try to go beyond the headlines, to make sense of the issues facing Maine families, to share what works, to seek alternative solutions. Family Radio Forum is produced with support from Cooperative Extension, the major educational outreach program of the University of Maine, with offices statewide. Cooperative Extension puts knowledge to work with the people of Maine, and like WERU, whose mission is to be a voice of many voices, operates out of a sense that everyone benefits when we share our knowledge, our experience, our concerns, and our perspectives. We're about to practice the magic of community radio, in which those of us in the studio and you who are listening create a dialogue that we hope will be of benefit to our friends, our neighbors, and colleagues. I hope you'll stay with us for the next hour and Family Radio Forum. And this morning, we'll be talking about generations at home and in the workplace. I'm delighted to have Louise Frank Sear, a colleague from University of Maine Cooperative Extension and a community development specialist, with us in the studio. And we'll be talking to other folks by phone. We urge you to take a note of our phone numbers and call in if you've got questions or comments. The toll-free number is 1-866-625-9378. Well, let's start in by getting to know Louise a little bit. Louise, you're a community development specialist with Cooperative Extension. What does that mean?
What that means is I work with our internal staff and communities to enhance and strengthen capacity.
Capacity in terms of helping people do things?
Do things, leadership, helping groups figure out what it is they want to do and helping them achieve that, helping them learn how to facilitate meetings, how to be more effective group members, those kinds of skills.
Mm-hmm. And when I had you on the radio the last time, I think it was a couple of years ago, you were talking about some women's leadership issues.
Mm-hmm. That's right? Correct, yes.
Right. Well, this topic of the generations, and we've got at least four generations in the workforce at this point. How did you get interested in how the generations relate to one another, especially in the workforce?
Mm-hmm. Well, as an employee of Cooperative Extension, I was on leave for a year and started reading about these four generations, because this is the first time in history where we actually have four generations in the workplace. And I was intrigued with how do we help the four generations get along in the workplace and not divide against certain values that we each hold. And the other issue that I was concerned about as well is how do we attract different people to the programs that we offer, as well as how do businesses attract different people from different generations. So it was with that lens that I started reading more about the four generations.
Mm.
That's correct.
So the sense was that maybe if we were baby boomers and we were doing the hiring or sitting on committees that did the hiring, we might not recognize some of the qualities of other generations. So we might tend to exclude and just bring people in who are just like us.
Of course. Of course. And right now, when you look at organizations, the majority of employees are probably baby boomers. And the baby boomers are going to make this mass exodus over the next, let's say, 10 years. And we need to have other employees on board so that the organization can still keep thriving.
Mm. So that's any organization. And how about, does this relate to how people think about family life as well?
Oh, absolutely. Because when you think of, for example, a mature who was born before 1946, who has a grandchild who's a Gen Xer, who was born between 65 and 83, you're going to have differences in values and differences in how they do things only because they were brought up in a different particular time. And events were happening during those time periods that really influence values and what people feel are important in their lives.
Mm. So this notion of values, can you give us some examples of what a value might be that people kind of take with them, both when they're in families or in the workplace?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, let's look, for example, at the matures, people who are born before 1946. So some of the events that happened during that time period was the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. So as a result, some of the core values that they've developed is sacrifice, hard work, law and order. They have a certain respect for authority. And that's because of different things that happened during that time period.
And so the notion that we might find that the notion that government either play a large role in life, that would influence how people saw things, because in the Great Depression, the government did step in and work on some things. So how does that translate to our generation? What were some of the events that we think about in terms of baby boomers?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, certainly the one that comes to mind would be the Vietnam War. The civil rights movement, the women's movement, TV. Mm. I mean, I remember I was in fourth grade, and all of a sudden we had TV. suburbia was another defining event. So as a result of that, boomers as a general population are very, very dedicated to the workplace. Like, work comes first. We're even considered workaholics at some point. And we're also very interested in personal growth and well-being. I mean, you look at all the self-help books that are in the bookstores. I mean, that attracts the baby boomer generation. And as a personality, we're quite driven and quite competitive.
So is that somehow, I don't see how that's related to the Vietnam War, but it might have been something else that was happening as we saw our parents somehow. Where did we get this as baby boomers, where do we get that drive to work, that work is really important?
Well, maybe, I mean, the sense I'm getting is perhaps one generation fell into the other because the baby boomers did not want to have the kind of life that the matures had, where there was the Great Depression and there was a lack of a lot of things as a result of that. So the baby boomers, perhaps their philosophy was, well, I'm going to work hard because I want to be able to prosper.
Mm-hmm. And we were growing up in the 50s, and I think that there was this notion promoted by television, mass media, that we could all have the good life. And the way to get to the good life was to work really hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm. And as a result, see, this is what I find fascinating, because then the next generation after us, the Gen Xers, they experience the boomers being workaholics and spending lots and lots of times at work. And the Generation Xers were what we used to call the latchkey kids. Mm. They were often home alone for periods of the day while parents were at work. And as a result, so some of their values are a little different than the boomers, because they've seen what the workaholic lifestyle has done to the boomer generation. And they come to the workplace wanting to have some balance, knowing that family is important. And it's not that they're not willing to go the extra mile. They'll do it occasionally, but it's not going to be like the boomers.
Right, and so they don't have the boomers' kind of fear of the depression that might have been passed on by their parents, and so they're not feeling that driven sense, and they see the negative impacts of a lifestyle, a set of values that says, oh, no, work comes before family.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's
so
correct.
Then there's one more generation.
Yes, the millennials, which were born from 1983 to about 2000, in some way, they're the generation where they were so scheduled as they were being brought up. Like, they had school, and then they had age, and very, very scheduled generation. Computers was a defining event. Lots of school violence. We had the Oklahoma City bombing. 9/11 was part of their generation. So for them, for example, like the boomers right now, we're concerned about diversity and making sure that the workplace is diverse enough. And for the millennials, that's the water they swim in, because they've been exposed to diversity from day one because of being in daycare, after-school childcare, and those kinds of experiences. So the millennials, they have a sense as a generation of civic duty. They want achievement. And they're very comfortable talking about ethical things, morality, diversity, and they're also very, very street smart. And the millennials are good at setting boundaries at work. Like, their philosophy would be, my job finishes at 5, I have another thing to go to. So you can see how each one kind of builds on the other.
And you can begin to see the potential conflicts if a millennial, for instance, is hired by or supervised by a baby boomer who says work is most important, and the millennial, you know, leaves work at 5, there might be some real misperceptions about what's important here.
Absolutely. Or even, let's say, we as boomers, when we look at job resumes, and we see that a person has moved around, let's say, every 3 or 4 years, a boomer might say, well, what's up with that? But as far as Generation Xers and millennials, that's what it is. You work at a job for a couple years, really build up your skills, and then you're looking to move on to something else. So it's not that they don't like the work. That's just how they view things.
Well, and the workplace has changed so much. And I don't think any of us expect, I mean, I don't think we probably grew up with the mature mentality that a lifetime employment, you know, and we see that in Maine, working at the mill. And people expected to work at the mill forever. Well, now mills are closing. So, you know, it sounds like the Gen Xers and the millennials really have, they've got the skills that are needed. to make these kinds of shifts.
Absolutely, absolutely, because that's the water they swim in. I mean, they come to work not with the perception that they're going to be guaranteed a job for 25 years. That's just not what their thinking is about.
Right. Anything, again, you're working from a research-based, as Cooperative Extension often does, anything that could apply to family life as well as work life from these generational perspectives, anything that might be useful to our listeners?
Well, certainly when you look at the Gen Xers, Gen Xers were the wanted generation.
Wanted, what do you mean?
Their kids are very, very important to them. And not that the other generations they're not, but it's just a matter of, you know, how much time do I want to spend with my kids? How much resources do I want to put into the developing of my kids? You know, those kinds of things. What comes to mind.
Right, and the millennials really haven't started, for the most part, maybe haven't started that journey at this point.
That's correct.
Well, let's involve some others. We've got representatives, if you will, from each of the generations who are going to speak with us by phone. And I'm delighted to have Father Jim Gower with us this morning by phone. Jim is I don't know if you've actually, Jim, do they retire Catholic priests? You're still a priest,
well,
aren't you?
We're supposed to be retired, but there's a great shortage. So as long as you can stand up or wheel you onto the altar, you get a job.
Okay, well,
and you have, and I think because of the nature of a vocation, it's here till you can speak your last.
Okay, well, I've known you in a number of different capacities, and actually, you've been on Family Radio Forum before. We were talking about some really interesting issues. What's your take on? And I think I can reveal that you were born before 1946. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
And what's some of your take on what we've been talking about here as we think about the mixing of generations? What was happening?
Well, I think it's beyond my way of thinking. Was it Louise? See, you people are specialists. You looked at it very, very specifically. I don't have that kind of understanding or that kind of, like, You speak so easily about, I'm still trying to figure out what the baby boomer is, and you've got it down to millennials and actors, baby boomers, and I'm wondering, I think I'm in all of them.
Right, and you've had a career that has allowed you to kind of be a part of people's lives at all generations, and yet
absolutely.
You probably do see some differences in the generations, however you define them. So,
I think that the Depression... I can go from my own personal experience.
Yes.
I'm no sociologist, but you're right, I've dealt with people. I think that my generations, I was born in 22, and I think that the Depression impressed me terrifically, because my dad said to us at the time, he said, I won't use all of his expletives. He's down south, down east, you know, some very, very colorful expressions. But he'd say, for the love of Pete, and that's putting it mild, for the love of Pete, get yourself an education.
Uh-huh.
And then he said, it's the only damn thing they can't take away from you. That was his mentality. Now, of course, that was just my father, wasn't everybody.
Mm.
But he had a hard time making a living during the Depression. Mm. Had to take all kind of things. So that affected me.
So how did that affect you?
Well, it affected me, I think, mostly through my sister, my older sister, because she would get a job, like babysitting, and say, "What are you doing?" I was 2 years younger. And she'd be the babysitter at 8 years of age, so I'd be seven, and she took me to the golf links. And that's a mile from downtown in Bar Harbor. And the guy, Mr. Haynes, brought out this big golf bag, one of those big leather ones with a lot of golf clubs. And I'm looking up at the club heads, because I was shorter than they were. And she said, I bought my brother because he'd like to be a caddy. And he said, well, he brought the bag out and looked at it. He said, well, I think you better bring him back in a few years. She said, well, he's 9. Could I bring him back at 10? He said, well, bring him back at about 14. Now, that sister of mine drove me from that to other jobs. Mm-hmm. I took her 50 customers from the Bar Harbor Times. When she found I couldn't be a caddy, then you can do this job.
Uh-huh.
She went out and did babysitting and so on. She had that sibling. Had a big influence on me. Hmm. I was not allowed to say, I can't find a job.
Wow. So how did that affect your work ethic?
Well, I think my work ethic was based really in the whole feeling of the Depression. We always felt we're in need of doing something. We had to get some money for food. It was that bad until 32 when Roosevelt came in. From 29 to 32, so I'd be from 7 to about 11, that period of growth, it was always a question of how are we going to get something to eat. A lot of beans, a lot of macaroni, mm-hmm. and we made it. But it was a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So it affected me, I think, even to this day. But my sister Eileen, who was 2 years older, had the practical values that pushed me.
Mm. Jim, you're kind of one of the guiding lights and guiding forces to College of Atlantic.
Yeah.
And so you were both kind of helping to think about, you know, hiring faculty, I suppose, and then meeting students. So did you see some different attitudes from those other generations?
Well, when College of Atlantic first started, I think it was more a question of, at least in my one, I'm just one of the people, but my thing at that time had become ecology, you know, saving the planet, and that beautiful island of Mount Desert Island, realizing having been away in the war and all the rest and come back and see this beautiful, peaceful place, that struck me as being essential. So I moved from worrying about depression into worrying about depressing the earth itself,
mm-hmm.
The idea of destroying the beauty that's there and the integrity that's essential if we're going to have a fully satisfying life. So that is what got it. I'm not sure if I'm sticking to the question.
Well, that's all right. No, I think that's helpful. As you began to encounter people of younger generations.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's the
were there some differences?
Yes. Certainly, at the beginning of the College of Atlantic, the kids were in there for a ride, and they just thought, oh, boy, this is back to nature and easy like that. Today, I find in the last, say, 30 years, a much greater sophistication, at least at the kids at the College of Atlantic, and I think otherwise, that I think when she talks about, when Lise talked about the different, the X's and so mm-hmm. on, they've become much more sophisticated. For example, moving on to another job and getting ready and expecting to change jobs. I think that in the beginnings when I was working with younger people, like at the College of Atlantic or seeing them, you know, they were sort of carefree.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, 68, 69 in that area, whatever mm-hmm. that generation was.
And so now they're probably bringing some technology skills.
Now it's much more focused, and they realize that they have to get they'll get a general education. But many of them, I'm getting kind of narrow in my vision here, but many are planning to go on to a master's degree.
Yes,
college education was the big thing when I was coming up and in the beginnings of the College of Atlantic. now it's, well, you've got to get a master's. I talked to a girl recently down there and said, my Lord, you're going to get a master's after this? She says, oh, yes, I'm getting a master's, then I'm going to get a law degree.
Uh-huh. You know, so they were taking your father's advice to heart, I guess. Get that education.
Yeah, that's right.
How about in terms of working through work with your churches and so on, in terms of voluntary life? Do you see any differences in terms of
how people voluntary?
Yeah.
Well, I'm in a Catholic church, and I think that may be very, very different from, for example, your small communities where people know each other. Small faith communities like with a small Baptist church or Jehovah's Witness, these people know each other, they know their names and so on, whereas in my tradition, the Catholic tradition, for the most part, it's in and out.
Mm.
And there's maybe Knights of Columbus and this and that, and there's a little volunteering, but it seems to me that if you have 200-300 people in a group, there's going to be 10 or 20 that are going to, or maybe a little bit more, there's a circle there that does the work. But as the numbers increase, the proportion of the people gets smaller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. That's my, because you see a small Baptist church, and just about everybody will be, they'll know, first of all, they'll know each other's names.
Uh-huh.
But you get the parish with, say, 500 families, 1,000 people or so, and they come do their duty Sunday. You can't find them if you want church clean. Well, you find a very few, and I'm glad to say, maybe I shouldn't say it this way, but the women are the ones who seem to come forth the most to do the work, you know, clean the church or do this or that, fix the flowers, and the men, well...
And how about the difference in generation? Is that dedication by women of a certain generation, is that changing?
I would say so. I think that they used to be great numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Like my mother was a member of the Rosary Sodality, and that was the big thing for most of the women in the parish.
Mm-hmm.
That had any kind of freedom, and my mother didn't have a great deal, so she was in that. And that would be a high percentage today, to be a very small percentage. However, in the Roman tradition, Vatican II introduced women to higher positions, and they have those that are very interested, those who have particularly say they went to a Catholic college or something like that, they want a bigger role, and they're getting a bigger role all the time.
Great.
Well, like being a chancellor right in the state of Maine. Now, we have Rita Mae Bissonnette, and she's a chancellor.
Uh-huh.
Unheard of.
Right.
30, 40 years ago.
Right. So changes.
But she is a woman, do a man's job. Well, she tells us where. She's the one that has to tell us where we're going to go.
Well, that's
seven parishes.
Right. Well, Jim, thanks for being with us this morning. We're going to go on to talk with some other folks.
Thank you for doing family.
Okay.
Nothing more important.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Father Jim Gower, now living in Stonington, but grew up in Bar Harbor, and talked about his Depression era kind of origins. Now we're going to go and talk with a business owner. Julie Vayu is owner of Window Panes with her husband, Greg. We're reaching her in Bar Harbor. Welcome to Family Radio Forum, Julie.
Thank you, Ron.
How are things in Bar Harbor this morning?
They're busy, you know. It's a typical. It seems like a steady stream of traffic, but with nice weather, I think most people are making their way out on the water or in the park, which is where I would rather be.
I'm sure.
Well, I've chosen this path of retail, so that's where I am.
Great. Well, you've been hearing a little bit of our conversation this morning.
Mm-hmm.
As a business owner, I think we can reveal that you're born after 1946.
I am.
Uh-huh.
I'm a boomer.
And but you encounter people from probably all of the generations as you either customers, certainly, or employees. What's your take on this generational piece?
Well, I think we actually have with our businesses, we have a real interesting cross-section of the generations. We're covering we've got the veterans, the boomers, the Gen Xers, and the millennials. And it makes for a real interesting workplace, you know, where you have, excuse me, I'm sorry? Ron, excuse me one second.
Yes,
okay.
Go ahead. We've got Julie Vayu on the line from Bar Harbor. I'll just list our phone numbers if you would like to participate in this conversation on the generations. You can call us toll-free at 1-866-625-9378. I'm joined in the studio with Louise Frank Sear, who's a community development specialist with University of Maine Cooperative Extension, one of my colleagues. And we're talking this morning about generations at home and in the workplace. Julie, are you back with us? No, she doesn't seem to be there. So we'll continue. Any observations, Louise, in terms of the conversation we had with Father Jim Gower, thinking about that mature generation?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was fascinating to really hear how the Depression has really shaped him and what is happening in his community as far as who's showing up to volunteer. Mm-hmm. So those are the two things that were striking to me.
Right. Yeah. Julie, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Great. So you were beginning to tell us about the mixing of generations in the workplace that you encounter.
Well, I think that we do have a very nice cross-section, and it makes for an interesting workplace. We have from the veterans that have what you call life experiences, whether it's because of their age and having raised families and having had a variety of jobs, and then having the younger generation. And everybody can learn from each other. With some of the veterans that I have, with this age of computers and all this new technological things being introduced, I think some of the veterans are a little skeptical about moving in that direction.
Right.
So you've got the millennial and the Gen Xers, which are, oh, this is easy, I've done that. And so they're really able to teach them, which is great, and vice versa. So there's a lot of that shared kind of thing going on between them, which is wonderful.
How about observations about the Louise was talking about for the most part, the baby boomers, work is really, really important to them, work, and might kind of surpass family life. Do you see some of those changes, and how do they show up in the folks that you work with?
I think that, I guess I would tend to agree with that, and a lot of, I would say probably the majority of our employees are in that boomer generation, and it is very important to them, the work, the quality of work. They take their jobs very seriously, and I hope that we all can be sort of a role model for the younger generations and letting them know the importance of work and, you know, taking your job seriously, being able to be that role model and really teach them something.
Mm-hmm. Do you, if you were to ask a millennial or a Gen Xer to work a little later, and what would be a typical response? Do you think?
I think they're pretty willing, but I think that there's that other part of life which is very important to them. And for example, with our schedule here at this store, I've always laid it out to the employees that these are the set schedules for the summer. However, things come up, things happen, whether it's a family reunion or a funeral or families coming to visit and you want to take them through the island, it's up to you to find a replacement. The point is that we need to have X number of bodies in the store every day. And so I really put that on their shoulders to find a replacement. And if they can't, then sometimes it just can't happen, and they have to realize, well, you know, and it kind of teaches them that lesson that you have to be responsible, you have to try to plan ahead, you have to work with other employees instead of just assuming, well, I don't want to come in today because it's a sunny day and I'm going to take off. And so it's been sometimes a little bit of a challenge with them, and we try to get them to understand that you've made a commitment to this job, and it's a short season, and I need you. We have to rely on you. But I do have some employees that, in even some of the younger generations, that understand just because they're through at 5 o'clock doesn't mean that, okay, I'm out of here, I need to go. And I let them know that if you're in the middle of a sale, finish up with your sale, continue, you know, carry right through. You'll get paid for that time. You know, and don't feel like I'm going to make you work an extra half hour, 15 minutes, and you're not going to get covered for it. And so these are sort of the things that you have to state up front to them, too, to get them to realize.
So, Julie, what you've had to do as a manager is really be flexible so that you get your work done, and mm-hmm. at the same time, you attract people from the different generations.
Right, absolutely. And I think you also have to, I know I find myself, and I was looking at some of the script that you had faxed along, I find myself stating things that were in that script, such as, we want to make the workplace fun. However, there are jobs that need to be done. And you just try to set these things, you know, ahead or in line for them so that they know that it's important to come to work, it's important to love your work, but it's important to know that you've got to get the job done. And things like, okay, your shift is over at 5 o'clock, but if you're in the middle of finishing up a big sale or we're unloading a truck or, you know, having to move freight around, then let's just kind of carry through and complete those jobs before the clock strikes. I need to go. Mm. My shift is over. And I think it's really important to let them know it's not okay to leave loose ends, you know, and just kind of walk away. And I'm trying to get them to understand that let's not start a new project if you don't think you can leave it at a point where, you know, I don't want to leave loose ends for tomorrow's employees coming in. Mm. And just get everybody to communicate. And we actually do a communication logbook, which has been really helpful. And it's a great way to get everybody to just sort of be on the same page. And, you know, so that's one of the things they do when they come to work is read about what went on while I wasn't here or during that shift. And so it's been a great tool for us.
And as you think about family life, both, you know, your own family and the families of your various employees, mm-hmm. are there some kind of balancing things that go on across the generations in terms of family life?
I think it's such a difficult thing in the summertime, and I think most of my employees with their families, it just feels like we're all just ships passing in the night, kind of, and it's difficult trying to find that time to be with family. But it's a real balance, and I really understand and respect the fact that people want to be home and they want to have some dinners with their families, or when their family comes to visit, they want to take them and share the island with them. And so it's important to try to find the time to make that happen. And these are things that are important, I think, to all the generations that work for us, whether it's the veterans to the younger. For example, I have a Gen Xer whose family is coming from Oklahoma, and she is trying to work her schedule so that she can take some time off to share the island with her folks. And I think that's great. I think that's really important to try to fit in. And a lot of the older employees recognize that. And so everybody's kind of working together to let's see how we can, you know, revamp or rework the schedule to make this work.
Great. Well, thanks to you for being with us this morning.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Great. Julie Bayou is an owner of Window Panes in Bar Harbor, encountering the different generations in the workplace. And you are tuned to Family Radio Forum this morning. My guest is Louise Franks here, who is a community development specialist. And together we're talking about generations at home and in the workplace. You're welcome to give us a call with your own comments or your own experience, if you'd like, at 1-866-625-9378. Well, next we're going to move beyond the baby boom generation to go to talk with a Gen Xer, I guess is how we say it. Emily Henry is with us. Emily is a landscape gardener on Mount Desert Island. Welcome to Family Radio Forum.
Thanks, Ron.
Tell us a little bit about your work, Emily. What's that like?
Sure. I work with a very small crew of organic kind of home gardeners. And we're a three-generational work crew, actually. But within the crew work, I think we're very unique because we're very focused on the same goals. So there isn't really any headbutting that happens, actually, within all of us.
Talk about your generation in terms of do you see some commonalities with your peers? What is it that you kind of bring to work, for instance, versus what you might see you're saying in your crew you don't see too much difficulty, but do you see some differences across the generations?
In my line of work, I do see some differences. I think that you can take, for example, outside of our crew, we do tend to work with a lot of different people on the job. For example, be it the client or the caretaker or the turf maintenance people or, you know, that sort of thing. So one issue can come up that we as organic gardeners will have a different approach than maybe the caretaker will in solving that problem. I do see a very typical situation, for example, is when we have, say, a pest on a plant and they work in that sort of thing. It's a very tricky situation to try and suggest an alternative method to chemicals or something like that. So it's, and I do see that as a generational problem. Because you're dealing with, I think specifically, a lot in the later baby boomer generations and before. You do see a lot of people that have grown up with pesticides. It's not a problem. You know, chemicals, when oil was seeping out of the earth and, you know, it was a very cheap commodity and you could make everything with it, all these pesticides came, changed the face of agriculture, that sort of thing. So they grew up with, it being okay, encouraged and having a spray and a chemical for every single sort of problem.
So, Emily, as a Gen Xer, how do you work with that boomer, given that you have a different value than your customer?
Sure. It's tricky, I think. What I've found is that it's kind of a multi, especially for me, because I'm younger, a lot younger in this gardening business. I'm just kind of, you know, starting out. So, when I talk to somebody older, I can already be kind of shut off by them just because of my age. I can get that kind of, if I start to talk to somebody about organic methods, like a baby boomer, I can already be totally shut off because I get this kind of like, hey, don't tell me what to do, you young little right. whippersnapper kind of thing. So, you have to approach it in a very, I found, in a way like you have to approach it being, an active listener. Mm-hmm. Like when I'm trying to talk to somebody about, if I ever want to have the chance of talking with somebody about an alternative method in gardening, especially when I know they're very set in their ways, I think that you have to let them talk first. You have to listen. You have to ask them why. You have to see the plant. You have to, go through the motions with them. And then that gives you a chance to be listened to, Mm-hmm. You can't just come across, to someone like a baby boomer, you can't just come across, to them, someone coming up to them and saying, hey, you've been doing this wrong your whole life. It's a terrible chemical, and, you're creating long-term effects that are, fine. See, so I think it's really tricky.
Yeah. So what I hear you doing is you have your value, and you're working with that person in a way that doesn't make them wrong. Mm-hmm. And you've developed techniques by listening to them first, and then your hope is that, they will hear you.
Right, right. That's the hope. Right. And oftentimes it's results that talk.
Right. They want to see. They want to see the results
right.
of your methods. And
right.
when they see that they work, then they're willing to kind of say, "Oh, well, maybe we could do that in the future."
Sometimes, yeah.
Louise was saying that the baby boomers were certainly influenced by the introduction of television. Television
yeah.
allowed mass marketing of the very chemicals that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Corporations were delighted to have this new method of selling products, whether it's chemical fertilizers or snack foods.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you've as consumers have developed some other ways of finding out information besides just you listening to the mass media. And I think
right.
that's a difference in the generations.
Right. And the other thing is that, we've lived just long enough so that all of this data collection on all of these chemicals and that sort of thing are coming out
right.
now.
Right.
So it's a hard thing to believe, like this very kind of almost cutting edge. I mean, we had Rachel Carson. We kind of knew things were happening that were
yep.
bad, but you know, now it's actually kind of mainstream thought that, oh, yeah, chemicals are not so great.
Mm.
So it's, it's hard for people to just find this out now and say, well, you know, I've been wrong for so long. I don't think so.
Right. Mm-hmm. You mentioned to me as we talked about doing this show that you feel in some ways you're on the cusp between generations.
Yeah.
And you've got at least one younger sibling. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you're seeing the millennial generation come up behind you.
Sure.
Any observations about that?
Well, I think my sister's also a cuss. I mean, she's in 83, so
right on that.
We're virtually the same, I think, in a lot of things. She copies me, but other than that,
uh-huh.
Virtually the same. Okay. I think that, you know, I work with a couple people that are a bit younger than my sister, actually, this season, and I'm learning a lot from them. I think that, you know, my age group has become a very aware age group as far as our impact in the world and our impact in the community and that sort of thing. But even more so, I've noticed that the people that I work with, the younger people, are even more about that. Like, I'm still kind of making excuses for people that, you know, maybe want to keep using pesticides. You know, well, it's in their background, it's in their da-da-da, it's in their da-da-da. These kids, I think, that are coming up now aren't taking those excuses as much. You know, I think they're just more set in just saying, no, we have to change, you know, and this can't be allowed anymore, basically.
And actually, the millennials have a lot in common with the boomers because both the boomers and the millennials are very, very idealistic, and they want to make a difference.
Sure.
So that's kind of what's in common. So I'm not surprised that you're saying that that's what you're seeing in the next generation.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thanks so much for being with us this morning on Family Radio Forum, Emily.
Sure,
okay. Emily Henry is a gardener, an organic gardener on Mount Desert Island. You're listening to Family Radio Forum. We're talking about generations at home and in the workplace. And my guest in the studio is Louise Frank Sear. Give us a call if you'd like at 1-866-625-9378 and participate in this conversation with your thoughts or your opinions or your questions. Now we're going to speak with a member of the millennial generation, and Emka Schlesler, is that how you pronounce your last name, Emka?
Schlesler.
Okay,
yep.
We'll get that right. Emka, you're with your administrative assistant with something called Project Opportunity at the University of Maine.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about Project Opportunity.
Project Opportunity is a program, again, run through the University of Maine, and it sponsors ESL endorsement for Maine public educators so that they can help, like, any non-English-speaking students become more adapt to perform well in the school programs that we have.
And you've been listening a little bit to our conversation about the different generations. Do you find that you're working with, obviously, folks of your own generation, but also folks who are called Gen Xers or baby boomers? Do you see any differences across the generations in terms of how you relate to work or family?
I think it's more in the lines of work that I see a difference, especially when you're working with diversity groups. Sometimes young adults closer to my age are more willing to accept the changes and adapt to, you know, having ELL students or English language learners in their classroom and teachers trying to adapt to them. They seem to adapt well. I'm not going to say that baby boomers or anyone in the previous generations don't deal well with that. I just think it's easier, or we've had an easier time adapting as the generations have come through.
Right. And Louise started out talking about the fact that members of your generations have been exposed to diverse situations, and therefore it might be easier to accept a new diverse situation.
Definitely, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. And as you've heard perhaps, Louise, or you maybe read the materials that we provided all of our guests this morning, in terms of some of the common values and some of the different values of the generations, do you have any sense of whether those ring true for you? Louise, maybe you could just kind of characterize the, if we can the millennials at this point, what are some of the things that we might think of in terms of the values of millennials?
Well, I think it was not Julie, but Emily that mentioned about this sense of civic duty and responsibility. And that's one of the key things of this particular generation, the millennials. And again, because that this particular generation is very idealistic. They want to make a difference.
Do you find that true to be true, Emka?
Myself, definitely. I've actually worked with the Maine Citizenship Education Task Force to increase civic engagement in young people around the state, just in an effort to get them involved in changing and making sure that there's equal diversity or equal opportunities for all people here. So I think for myself personally, that rings true, absolutely.
Do you have a sense of where you and others of your generation got that inspiration to be more engaged in the community? What drew you to that?
That's a hard question. Let me think about that.
Okay.
I think it's more of seeing where things have gone since
yes.
we were youngsters. I mean, when I was in the first grade, we had the first Gulf War. And when you're younger and you see a war happening just on, you know, when you're 10, 11, you know, years old and whatnot, you see that it's not a pleasant thing. And I think that that maybe inspired our generation a little bit to seek social change. And we are idealistic and we do want to see people, you know, having equal opportunities. And just, I think, watching the kids maybe 10 years older than us made us want to get more involved. We did live through the grunge era of no one cares. So.
Right. So each generation is influenced by the one just ahead in some ways.
Yeah.
Are there any keys to success in working across the generations that you found, especially as you worked with in school situations and trying to introduce new techniques and so on? What have you found works?
I think just keeping an open mind. There are a lot of people my age who think maybe that the older generations may be a little more narrow-minded than they would expect, but they don't really give them a chance.
Mm.
The more open you are to what they've gone through and experiences of other people, the better your lines of communication. And I think just making sure that you're as open-minded as possible will improve any communication between the generations and inevitably make us work well together.
Mm-hmm. Emily Henry had mentioned the notion that when she's working with a client, for instance, who might not be familiar with organic techniques that she's trying to introduce, she starts by listening. Sounds like you're saying some of the same things.
Definitely. That's the only way to start.
Mm.
So, Emka, you're relatively new to the workforce. What attracted you to that particular position that you're in now?
One, the people that work there, great range in age from, you know, 40, 50, right down to 24. My supervisor is actually 24 years old right now. And they're really interested in making sure that the younger generations are getting involved with the older generations in our community. And for me, that's just been an important factor in my life. I've always liked to be involved in community projects. And anything that gets kids involved is something I'm interested in.
Hmm. And what will have you stay in your job? Like, what are some of the perks that you really enjoy about your work?
I enjoy the flexibility of what I do right now. I do enjoy more in the Orono area, so just location helps. And I think just the people that work there are so open-minded and they're very pleasant. And, you know, the cost, the pay really isn't an issue for me as long as the people I'm working with are as nice as they are and remain that way. That's really the best perk I could have.
That's great.
Well, that's very typical of this generation because you like to work side by side with your friends where the work is both collaborative and creative, and I'm also hearing fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Emka, thanks for being with us this morning.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Great. Emka Schlesler, who is an administrative assistant with Project Opportunity at the University of Maine. Louise, we're more or less winding down the hour, but we'll give our listeners a chance to phone in with their comments or questions. Toll 1-866-625-9378. I can imagine that most people are out there doing something else besides listening to the radio this morning. It's such a great day out there. But do give us a call if you've got a question or comment as we talk about generations at home and in the workplace. Where does the research kind of point next? How do we use this information in a really useful way to improve communications, improve family life, improve work life?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's important as we learn more about each generation that we don't put people in boxes, and we really see this as a way to open the door for conversation and to really, let's say, for example, if a millennial talks with a mature and finds out more about, well, what was it like in the Great Depression? They get more of an idea of what it is that they value. And then oftentimes you can find something that they have in common as opposed to disconnecting.
Right. So those values, we need to have conversations about values.
Absolutely.
Right. We do have a call. I'll list our phone numbers one more time, 1-866-625-9378. But go ahead with your question or comment, please.
Hi, this is Bob Harpswell from Trenton.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Now, I was interested in what you were talking about there with societally and generation to generation, the change and how generations observe the generation in front of them. I think also today, older people, I'm 43, are observing the generations below them.
Yes.
What they're doing.
Do you have any observations about the generations that are kind of coming along behind you?
Well, I think from when I was growing up, a lot of things have changed in the way that people view things. Now, I was very young when Vietnam was going. Someone was talking about the Gulf War when they were in first grade, and I was young when Vietnam was going on. And now today we've got the Iraq War, and who knows what else will be going on. But I think the way that Vietnam was handled then and the way that Iraq is being handled now are similar and different, but that the way the young people of today are handling it, I don't think is the best way, because they have to think about it in a way that is less selfish, and I think support it not by necessarily fighting, but by understanding what's going on and trying to fix it.
So in some ways, it might be my observation that we didn't learn too much from the Vietnam War as a nation, and we find ourselves right back in some of those dilemmas. So we should have been learning more than we did.
I think it is another learning experience where I think we have the opportunity and the advantage of having experience and to learn from our mistakes and take it as a stepping stone to bigger and better things.
Well, thanks for your call this morning.
All righty. Thank you.
Do we have another call? We do have another call, so go ahead with your question or comment, please, here on Family Radio Forum.
Hi, I'm a teacher, and I work with kids, and I noticed that the millennial generation, I must be getting them now, because there's a big change in the last 5 years. They seem like a little more idealistic, and you really feel like this generation, just the last few years, they're going to be okay. They kind of, they have like that one of your callers there was talking about organic farming and things, and they do seem like they're sort of willing to pick up the world and deal with it,
Boy, we're thankful for that, because we're not leaving it in a very good shape, are we?
No.
So as a teacher, you've probably seen kind of successive generations kind of move through the classroom, assuming you've been there for a while. So you're seeing some differences now in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it's interesting that when you mentioned the millennial generation, because I realized that must be the kids I'm teaching, because what is it, 1986 to 2000?
Something like that, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's just about the time that, sort of a little change has happened, or, you see more kind of kids are less into sort of just drugging themselves out and more into, dealing with what's going on.
Right. So that's a great observation. Thanks for being with us this morning on Family Radio Forum.
Yeah, thank you.
So we're about the end of the hour. Louise, anything, again, that you'd like to say in terms of how we use this information in family life, in community life, in the workplace?
Well, again, it's just a matter of being open to engaging in a conversation around the difference, mm-hmm. and then go from there.
Mm-hmm. And this notion that we should not be putting each other from generation to generation in some kind of I know from my own kind of reading that our values are informed by our parents, but they're a lot informed by our peers. You know, the people we've grown up with and the experiences we've gone through together help frame those values. So it's conversation that allows us to discover those.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And keeping in mind that each generation wants to be admired by the next generation. So you have that going as well as each generation wants to be distinguished from another generation. So whether or not that's music or vocabulary or the way they dress.
In my era, it was how long your hair was.
Right. So those are the two things that we all have in common.
Uh-huh. We want to be distinctive and we want to be respected by the other
generations.
Absolutely. If we remember that, we want to acknowledge that distinctiveness and praise people for the good qualities and to kind of recognize that we want that respect ourselves.
Absolutely.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, we've come to that time when I want to remind you that this program was produced with support from Cooperative Extension and the Hancock County Extension Association. With offices in each county, Cooperative Extension is the major educational outreach program of the University of Maine. Our radio collaboration with WERU began in 1990 and continues with your support. Join us on the third Friday of each month at this time for Talk of the Towns and on the second Friday of each month for Family Radio Forum. Our shows are now archived on the WERU website. Go to weru.org and click on Archives. Our theme music is Tommy's DeBurka's, performed by Alistair Frazier and Paul Maclis from The Road North on Narada Records. Thanks again to Louise Frank-Sear, Community Development Specialist from the University of Maine. Also to our telephone guests this morning, Father Jim Gower, a retired Catholic priest, Julie Veyu, who's a business owner of Window Panes in Bar Harbor, Emily Henry, who's a landscape gardener, organic gardener on Mount Desert Island, and Emka Schleschler, who is administrative assistant with Project Opportunity at the University of Maine. Thanks to all of you for participating. Thanks to you who listened and called in. Thanks to our underwriters, and thanks to Amy Brown for engineering our program. This is Ron Beard, your host for Family Radio Forum, wishing you a good morning.